Imagine a video game character that has to actually, metabolize the food they eat. Like, if they don't eat, they physically lose muscle mass.
Right, which is already crazy to think about.
Yeah. But now imagine that exact same software architecture being loaded into a physical humanoid robot.
A robot that's like managing the logistics of your local power grid.
Exactly. And the wild thing is, that isn't science fiction anymore. That is exactly where we are right now. So, welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here.
Today, our mission is to act as your shortcut to being well-informed. We are cutting through the noise of what was honestly an incredibly dense period in tech history.
Oh, dense is an understatement.
Right. We're relying on a single foundational piece of intelligence for this, which is the Tekken Monthly August 2026 Grand Retrospective Dossier.
It is just a phenomenal piece of sourcing. I mean, looking at the sheer volume of data from August, you start to see a very clear, intense friction point.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Right, because on one side, you have these skyrocketing digital capabilities. We're talking photorealistic, generative video, macroeconomic crypto maturation, and staggering gaming fidelity.
And then on the other side.
On the other side, there's this fierce, almost desperate defense of the physical and human realm.
Okay, let's unpack this because that friction starts right where the digital and physical worlds meet, our screens.
Absolutely.
Generative video took a leap this month that frankly makes last year's models look like, I don't know, flipbook animation.
It really does.
Alibaba Cloud dropped one 3.0, 1x, basically. And it completely shattered the Western monopoly on cinematic AI video.
It was a massive disruption.
Yeah, and it wasn't just that it output in photorealistic 1080p, it was the complex Hollywood lighting that caught my attention.
Well, the lighting is the crucial metric here.
Really? Why the lighting specifically?
Because when an AI generates a scene, it doesn't intuitively know what light
Yeah.
is. In earlier iterations, the algorithm was just guessing pixel colors based on flat images it had seen before. It was just pattern matching.
So it didn't actually understand the space.
Exactly. But One 3.0 is effectively emulating ray tracing within its neural network. It actually understands the computational physics of how a light source scatters across different textures.
Like how skin absorbs light differently than a metal table would reflect it.
Yeah, and all of that is simulated in a 3D spatial geometry that it just constructs on the fly.
That is insane. And of course, Google immediately fired back.
Oh, they didn't waste any time.
No, they rolled out Google DeepMind's Gemini Omni 1.1 Flash. And they leaned heavily into solving the biggest nightmare for AI directors, which is temporal coherence.
Right, the consistency problem.
Yeah, they introduced a 40-second scene extension and a 10-second temporal coherence memory buffer.
What's fascinating here is that we have crossed a very specific computational threshold.
How so?
That memory buffer is everything. In older AI video, the model was essentially hallucinating frame by frame with severe amnesia.
Like it just forgot what it just drew.
Exactly. If a character turned around, the AI forgot what the back of their head looked like, so their face would morph or a coffee cup in the background would just melt into the table.
Right. It basically operated on dream logic. Things just shifting constantly.
Yeah,
But a
exactly.
10-second buffer means the model is holding the mathematical state of that entire 3D scene in its active memory for 10 full seconds.
Which is an eternity in compute time.
Right. And it gives a human director granular keyframe by keyframe control. I mean, it is no longer an experimental prompt box, right? It's a computational camera rig.
Precisely. Generative video has officially graduated to director-controlled cinematography, but having that level of rendering power creates an immediate physical bottleneck.
Because of the screens we use.
Right. If the software can generate photorealistic, physically accurate worlds in real time, traditional flat display panels are just no longer sufficient to actually perceive that fidelity.
Which brings us to the hardware side of this equation. It's like having an entire Hollywood VFX studio trapped in your pocket. But how do we actually look at this content?
That was the big question at Gamescom.
Yeah, specifically what Samsung unveiled at Gamescom 2026, the Odyssey 2027 displays. The specs on this thing are wild.
They really are pushing the limits.
They introduced a 500 hertz micro OLED panel. Now, we all know 500 hertz means extreme motion clarity, but it's the optics built on top of that panel that changed the game.
Yeah, they cracked glassless, autostereoscopic 3D spatial optics.
Say three times fast.
I know, it's a mouthful. But they did it by solving the latency problem. The display integrates high-speed dual eye-tracking cameras that monitor your pupils literally hundreds of times a second.
Wow.
And sitting over the micro OLED panel is an active lenticular micro lens array.
Okay, so lenticular lenses, those are the microscopic ridges that refract light at different angles, right? Like those old holographic baseball cards we used to get, but active.
That is exactly like that, but dynamically controlled.
Okay, how does that work in real time?
So the eye tracking tells the screen exactly where your left and right eyes are positioned in 3D space in your room.
Right.
The screen then physically shifts those microscopic lenses in real time to beam a slightly offset 4K image directly into each pupil independently.
That sounds like it would make you dizzy.
It would if it were slow, but because the refresh rate is 500 hertz and the eye tracking is instant, you don't perceive the shift at all.
You just see genuine holographic volume without wearing any glasses.
Exactly. The digital objects possess actual physical depth in the room with you.
And what we are rendering on those displays is pushing hardware to its absolute limits. Like at the 9th generation consoles at Gamescom, we're heavily relying on machine learning just to keep up.
They absolutely had to. That raw compute isn't enough anymore.
Right. We saw the PlayStation 5 Pro running Dune, awakening natively at a locked 4K resolution at 60 frames per second, and the Nintendo Switch 2 was running Elden Ring, Tarnished Edition.
Which is incredible. Running a massive open-world game like Elden Ring on a portable hybrid console is just a masterclass in optimization.
Yeah.
And that's driven entirely by the custom NVIDIA system on chip and their DLSS Tensor cores. And for Sony, it was Unreal Engine 5.5 paired with their PSSR upscaler.
PlayStation Spectral Super Resolution.
Right.
But I want to clarify how this actually works for you listening, because upscaling isn't just like stretching an image anymore. The console isn't actually rendering a 4K game, is it?
No, not natively at all.
It's rendering something much smaller, maybe 1080p, and then using a neural network to hallucinate the missing pixels using motion vectors.
Right.
Like the AI is practically predicting what the next frame should look like before the graphics card even draws it.
That is exactly the mechanism. It uses what we call temporal feedback loops.
Okay, break that down.
So the machine learning algorithm analyzes previous frames and the geometry vectors of the current frame. Then it injects subpixel detail that the GPU never actually processed.
It's just filling in the blanks.
Very smartly filling in the blanks. It allows the silicon to punch vastly above its weight class, which is vital because the simulation demands on the CPU have skyrocketed.
Which perfectly brings us to the biology of Grand Theft Auto 6.
Oh, this was fascinating.
Honestly, Rockstar's technical disclosures for GTA 6 sounded more like a medical journal than a game manual.
That went incredibly deep.
Yeah, they are simulating dynamic muscle hypertrophy, meaning the protagonists, Jason and Lucia, will actually build or atrophy muscle based on their physical activity.
It's a full metabolic simulation.
Yeah. They've coded in stamina degradation and actual metabolic feeding cycles.
And that biological simulation extends to the whole environment.
Like the NPCs.
Exactly. The pedestrians in Vice City are no longer running on coded pathing tracks. They operate on neural behavioral networks.
So they aren't just walking back and forth.
No, they're reacting, assessing threats, and navigating the simulation dynamically.
I have to push back here, though.
Yeah. Because
there is a glaring contradiction in all of this.
What do you mean?
Well, these digital worlds are achieving perfect biological simulation, right?
Right.
And the screens beam them into our rooms holographically. But do we as players actually own anything in these worlds anymore? Like, if I buy this masterpiece simulation, is it mine?
No. Sure answer, no. And that realization is exactly what triggered the PS Blackout boycott in August.
Yeah, that's huge.
It wasn't just a minor internet grievance. It was a massive grassroots consumer revolt.
Right, because Sony made a hardline corporate declaration that digital game purchases are essentially temporary revocable licenses.
Yes, and the mechanics of cloud-tethered licensing are just brutal for preservation.
Walk us through what actually happens when you buy a game now.
So when you quote-unquote buy a digital game, a cryptographic key is assigned to your account. But that key requires an active ping to a centralized authentication server to function.
It has to phone home constantly.
Every single time. If the publisher decides to deprecate the server, or say if a licensing agreement for in-game music expires, they simply revoke the authentication handshake.
And then what?
Your game, which you paid full price for and downloaded locally to your hard drive, is instantly bricked.
Which means your entire digital library is effectively a long-term rental.
Exactly.
The pushback against this was so intense that Shuhei Yoshida, the former PlayStation chief, actually broke ranks and spoke out publicly about it.
Which is very rare for an executive of his stature.
Yeah, he defended physical media.
Yeah.
He even praised Microsoft's Xbox Disk Digital Preservation Initiative.
Which tells you a lot. When a legacy executive praises a direct rival's preservation efforts, it highlights a profound cultural clash.
Yeah, it really does.
We are watching a defining battle between the financial convenience of ephemeral media and the fundamental concept of perpetual consumer rights.
It's a fight for permanence.
Exactly.
And that defense of what is real, what is permanent, it extends beyond consumer rights directly into human livelihoods. Specifically, the creators actually building these worlds.
Right.
Tim Willits, the chief creative officer at Saber Interactive, drew a massive line in the sand this month.
He issued a historic corporate pledge.
Yeah, guaranteeing zero AI-driven worker displacements at his company.
And he backed it up. He pointed out that their human writing staff had actually tripled.
Which is amazing. In an industry that is just rushing toward automation, it was a profound ethical and operational statement.
And honestly, the empirical data suggests it was a very smart operational move, too.
Let's talk about that data. Taking Game's Nextify AI lab tests ran benchmarks on the new Kling 3.0 AI model this month.
Yeah, the new model.
Now, Kling 3.0 is absurdly fast. It delivers rendering speeds that are 7 to 11 times faster than previous architectures. It's spitting out a render in 5 minutes.
Which is incredible speed.
And it's great at chaotic elements like combat visual effects.
Yeah.
But it completely failed the avatar test.
Completely failed. It could not generate bespoke avatars from personal photos.
Why does it fail at that? Like, if it can render a photorealistic explosion perfectly, why can't it draw a specific person's face consistently?
Well, it comes down to latent space interpolation.
Okay, translating for the non-engineers here.
Right, so AI models don't actually see a face. They map visual data onto a multidimensional mathematical space.
Okay.
When you ask for an explosion, the AI can sample a massive, very forgiving area of that latent space. Because fire is chaotic, there is no wrong way an explosion looks.
It's just a bunch of orange and yellow fire.
Exactly. But human identity is rigid. If the distance between the eyes or the curve of the jaw is off by even a single millimeter,
it looks weird.
The human brain instantly recognizes it as an imposter. It triggers the uncanny valley.
So it can't fake a specific human face.
No. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the diffusion models struggle with rigid structural fidelity outside of their generalized training distribution.
Meaning they're great for general vibes, terrible for specifics.
Right. The data confirms that AI remains an assistive accelerator. It lacks the artistic soul and the structural precision to actually replace human imagination or nuanced character creation.
But the corporate giants are still placing multi-billion dollar bets on those models getting smarter. Like, NVIDIA just acquired Hugging Face for $12.9 billion.
A massive acquisition.
Yeah. And for those who aren't developers, Hugging Face has basically been the central repository, the town square, for open source machine learning models.
Yes. And by acquiring it, NVIDIA is effectively dragging the entire open source community into its proprietary CUDA enterprise ecosystem.
It's a huge power grab.
It's an aggressive consolidation of power, ensuring that the development of massive trillion parameter generalist models happens on their terms, optimized specifically for their silicon.
But there was a fascinating counterpunch to the exact strategy this month, coming from Inherent Bio's Faraday AI agent.
This was a huge surprise.
While NVIDIA is building these massive generalized behemoths, Faraday is microscopic. It operates on only 27 million parameters.
Compared to trillions.
Right. And yet in complex biochemical reasoning tests, that 27 million parameter model beat the trillion parameter generalist models with 99.4% accuracy.
It's staggering.
How is that mechanically possible?
Think of a trillion parameter large language model, like a brilliant jazz musician.
Okay.
It has heard every song ever recorded, and when you give it a prompt, it improvises beautifully based on probabilities. It just predicts the most likely next note.
But biochemistry doesn't run on probability.
Exactly. It runs on strict physical laws. The Faraday microagent is more like a concert pianist playing from a highly specific sheet of music.
So no improvising?
None. It doesn't use probabilistic word guessing. It relies on deterministic logic trees and constrained parameter mapping tailored entirely to biochemical formulas.
So it sacrifices the ability to, like, write you a poem or generate an email.
Right.
in exchange for absolute hallucination-free precision in one specific domain.
Exactly. And it proves that throwing raw compute at a problem isn't always the answer. Specialized architecture can outperform generalized mass.
Well, as these microagents become hyper-capable, they also become incredibly dangerous. And here's where it gets really interesting. The cyber-physical front lines heated up massively in August.
They absolutely did.
The FBI and the NSA executed a joint takedown of a Chinese state-sponsored cyber intelligence network known as QTFY.
And the mechanics of the QTFY network were deeply alarming.
Yeah, the state actors were deploying weaponized Q-Scan IoT reconnaissance engines and QT router proxy meshes.
Yes, that was the core of it.
Right, they were infiltrating the Internet of Things. But wait, how do you use a smart thermostat or a home router to hack the Federal Reserve or the Department of Energy?
You use them to mask your origin.
Okay, how so?
If a Chinese intelligence server directly pings NASA's infrastructure, it gets flagged and blocked instantly, right?
Sure, obviously.
So instead, the Q-Scan engine infects tens of thousands of unsecured residential devices. Your smart fridge, your home router.
Just everyday appliances.
Yes. They weave these devices into a proxy mesh. When the attack is launched, the malicious traffic routes through those infected home devices.
Oh, wow. So to the Federal Reserve security systems.
It doesn't look like a coordinated state-level attack. It looks like thousands of standard American residential IP addresses trying to log in.
It's a decentralized cloaking device.
Exactly.
Thankfully, consumer infrastructure defense took some huge leaps to cut off these vulnerabilities. Google pushed Android 17 this month, and they went straight for the hardware level. They permanently disabled legacy 2G modems.
Which was long overdue. This shuts down the classic downgrade attack.
The stingrays.
Right. For years, malicious actors used IMSI catchers, commonly known as stingrays. A stingray spoofs a cell tower and forces the targeted phone to downgrade its connection from 5G all the way down to 2G.
Because 2G is vulnerable.
Exactly. 2G lacks modern encryption, meaning the attacker can intercept SMS messages in plain text.
Including your two-factor authentication codes.
Yes. But by excising 2G entirely, Android 17 neutralizes that entire vector.
Google also enforced encrypted SNI across the OS.
Which is another huge win for privacy.
Yeah, the server name indication is usually the one piece of data sent in plain text during a security handshake when you visit a website.
Right, so your internet provider or someone snooping on your network could see the exact domain you were connecting to, even if the rest was encrypted.
But encrypted SNI seals that leak.
It does, and we saw a similarly critical patch in the decentralized finance space, too.
Oh, the Ledger update.
Right, the Ledger Ethereum app, version 1.22.2, received an emergency remediation from One Key Security Lab.
What were they fixing?
They discovered a transaction replacement bug in smart contracts and mandated cryptographic clear signing.
Clear signing is huge because blind signing has been a nightmare in crypto.
An absolute nightmare.
For those who don't know, you connect your hardware wallet to a decentralized app and it asks you to approve a transaction by signing a string of hex code that a human literally can't read.
You're just flying blind.
Yeah, you just have to trust the app isn't quietly draining your wallet.
But clear signing changes the architecture. It forces the smart contract to parse the exact intent of the transaction into human-readable terms.
Before you click approve.
Exactly. Before the private key is allowed to authorize it, it verifies intent at the cryptographic level.
Security is tightening because the threat surface is expanding into the physical world. And this wasn't just individual patches. A pact of 130 technology leaders issued an urgent public warning.
Yeah, this was unprecedented. We're talking OpenAI, Microsoft, Google, Cisco.
They stated that the window to fortify physical critical infrastructure, like our hospitals, our power grids, and water utilities, against autonomous offensive AI algorithms is closing fast. The hyperscalers in Silicon Valley know this, which is why we are seeing a massive pivot in capital expenditure.
They're moving away from software.
They are. They're moving away from pure software and pouring billions into physical humanoid AI robotics.
Taking those hyper-capable neural agents and deploying them into advanced automated manufacturing and logistics hubs. Right. And consumer hardware is actually shifting to support this. Apple just unveiled its 3-nanometer M6 and M5 Ultra Silicon.
The key metric there is unified memory bandwidth, isn't it?
It is. In a standard PC, the system RAM and the GPU's memory are separated by a PCIe bus.
Which acts like a slow toll bridge between the two.
Exactly. But Apple's unified memory allows the CPU and GPU to access the same massive pool of memory simultaneously.
So what does that actually mean for AI?
It means a desktop Mac can now hold a 100 billion parameter AI model entirely in local memory, bypassing the cloud entirely.
So the brain no longer needs a server farm.
Right. It can sit on your desk or inside the chassis of a humanoid robot walking a warehouse floor.
But there's a glaring bottleneck here. Apple's 3-nanometer silicon robotic manufacturing hubs, $12 billion corporate acquisitions, all of this requires staggering amounts of capital expenditure.
It does.
In a tight economy, how are corporate treasuries actually financing this in 2026?
Well, that requires an entirely new financial plumbing, which we really saw crystallize in August. This was the month the crypto market reached profound macroeconomic maturation.
Right, following the Jackson Hole Economic Symposium.
Yes. Bitcoin established a concrete institutional floor between $78,000 and $81,000.
And we saw European asset management firm Capital B secure 21 million euros in financing, backed by Bitcoin pioneer Adam Back, specifically to expand sovereign corporate Bitcoin reserves.
Corporations are effectively treating it as a digital gold standard to back their balance sheets.
And that institutional confidence allows for revolutionary liquidity mechanics. Galaxy One rolled out an 8.99% APR crypto-backed fiat credit line.
Yes, accepting Bitcoin, Ethereum, and State Solana as collateral.
Wait, I have to stop you there because to a lot of people that sounds like a massive house of cards.
I know it sounds risky.
Right. Crypto is notoriously volatile. If a company building a data center leverages their stake Solana and Solana drops 40% overnight, doesn't this quote-unquote revolutionary liquidity trigger an immediate catastrophic margin call that bankrupts the project?
This raises an important question about how these specific credit lines are actually structured.
Okay, explain it to me.
They rely on extreme over-collateralization. You aren't borrowing dollar for dollar. But more importantly, this mechanism fundamentally solves the tax liquidity trap.
Okay, how does that work in practice?
Imagine your corporation holds $10 million in staked Solana.
Okay.
If you need fiat cash to buy those Apple M6 chips, you could just sell your crypto.
Right.
But selling triggers a massive capital gains tax event. You lose a huge percentage of your wealth instantly to taxes.
Oh, I see.
With Galaxy One, you don't sell. You lock the asset into a smart contract as collateral, and they hand you dollars or euros. No taxable sale is ever triggered.
Wow. And the absolute kicker is the staking mechanic. By staking the Solana, you are locking the tokens to help validate the blockchain network. And in return, the protocol pays you a yield.
Exactly.
And that automated yield pays off the 8.99% interest on the fiat loan automatically.
Bro, it is literally self-servicing debt.
That is wild.
It formally integrates decentralized digital assets into 21st century corporate treasury management. It is exactly the kind of sophisticated financial engineering required to fund the staggering physical costs of this AI robotics boom.
So looking back at the grand retrospective for August 2026, we are staring at a month of profound contradictions.
You really are.
We have AI generating perfect, computationally accurate digital video, while our physical hardware, you know, our 500 hertz optical displays and unified memory desktop silicon just races to catch up.
Yeah.
We have NVIDIA consolidating open source power, while tiny 27 million parameter micro agents prove that specialized precision actually beats brute force.
And we have the hyper-realistic biological simulation of digital worlds clashing head-on with our demand to actually own our media and protect human creators.
So what does this all mean?
Well, we've talked a lot today about AI simulating biology and managing our money.
Right.
But consider the legal and philosophical infrastructure surrounding it.
Okay.
We are handing autonomous systems the keys to corporate treasuries and physical power grids.
Which is terrifying.
It is. If a highly specialized AI agent operating on a sovereign corporate Bitcoin reserve executes an autonomous trade that bankrupts a municipality, who goes to jail?
Oh, wow.
Is it the coder who built the micro agent, the CEO who deployed it, or the algorithm itself?
That's a massive gray area.
Exactly. As these systems move out of our screens and into humanoid robotics and macroeconomic plumbing, the defining question of the next decade won't be about computational power.
What will it be?
It will be whether human, legal, and biological society remains the director of this technology or simply becomes another data point in its environment.
When the line between the simulation and reality vanishes, who is legally responsible for the consequences? That is an incredibly vital thought to leave on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the systems operating quietly in the background of your world, and we'll see you next time.